The 82-game preseason is in the books, and it's finally time for the real season. Don't miss out on any of the NBA playoff action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. From the play-in tournament through the finals, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered with same-game parlays, live betting, odds boosts, and so much more. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code Ross. New customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. That's code Ross, only on DraftKings. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction, void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/football for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
You're listening to DraftKings Network.
You're tuned in to the Ross Tucker Football Podcast, guiding your gridiron journey none other than your host, former NFL lineman, Ross Tucker.
Oh, yeah, it is. But it's not just any Ross Tucker Football Podcast. It is a Monster Monday. It's presented by DraftKings. It is a new week with the Ross Tucker Podcast Network. We'll have a college draft podcast with Emory Hunt today, talking about kind of his tier two quarterbacks, if you will. Emory's always good, by the way, for some hidden gems. Definitely make the college draft part of your listening or viewing repertoire. YouTube.com/RossTuckerNFL or part of the DK Network. You can check me out on social. I really appreciate those of you that do. At RossTuckerNFL, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, TikTok. Rating and reviewing the show is huge, which is why anybody that does that has a great chance to be the spread the word winner this week. Rate and review the show anywhere, Apple Podcasts, Spotify. Send it to me in an email. It's such an easy way to win a signed press pass from your boy, ross@rostucker.com. You can also just take advantage of any of our amazing sponsors. We got a bunch of good ones. westshorehome.com/ross is a goodie. And send that to me, ross@rostucker.com. Very fired up, by the way, for today's guest. I think everybody's still surprised. Mike Vrabel's not a head coach in the NFL. Bill Belichick's not a head coach in the NFL. There were certainly some trends that went down this year. Our guy Mike Lombardi from the GM Shuffle podcast, he's got thoughts. He's got takes. We also have patrons. Patreon.com/RTMedia. Shout out Austin Emmett. It's big show time.
The big show.
You know, I'm guessing a lot of you probably already listen to the GM Shuffle podcast. It's very popular. It's another show that's part of the DraftKings Network from my buddy Mike Lombardi. He also does the Lombardi Line show for VEASAN. He's got the Daily Coach, which is a really cool daily email that you should check out. It's both Mike Lombardi and George Raveling. It's really cool to every day just get some of the tidbits. Mike, I know that's something you're very proud of.
Yeah, I love it. It's the best thing. It's the, you know, most rewarding thing in your career. I think you get to a point in your life where you kind of, you stop chasing and you give back, which if you started your life that way, you probably would be better off. And, you know, I got to have an opportunity to, I don't know if many people know the great George Raveling. George Raveling was a basketball coach, was a player at Villanova. Then he went on to become...
I didn't know he played hoops at Nova.
He played hoops at Nova.
Okay.
It's a great story about Rav. So Rav's a player at Villanova in 1963. He's done playing hoops. Great high school player from Washington, D.C. Goes to Villanova, gets done in 63. He and his buddy on the basketball team are kind of going to become GAs on the Villanova basketball team. They're going to go into coaching. And so they go down. It's a summer day. They go down to this guy's dad's house, and they're going to spend the weekend down there. And the dad is a dentist, and the dad says to these two kids, he said, are you guys going to go to D.C. tomorrow? And they said, no, you know, we don't have any money. We don't have a car. He said, well, I think it's really important that you go, because for the African-American community, it's going to be a powerful message. And so August of 63,
wow,
Martin Luther King's going down there. So the dad gives him his car. They go down there. They gives him money. They rent a hotel room on the outskirts of town. And the morning of the talks, they go start walking the parade ground. Now you got 2 6'6" guys, right? You know, walking around 6'6", 6'7", and so somebody comes up to him and says, "You want to be a security guard?" And they said, "Yeah, sure, why not?" And so they put Coach Rav on the stage. So there's 16 speakers that day on the Washington Monument. Dr. King's the last speaker. You're really only supposed to go between 5 and 8 minutes. They really wanted to time it out. They wanted more of the enthusiasm. And so right around the 5-minute mark of Dr. King's speech, Mahalia Jackson, who's sitting on the stage, she's behind him. And she screams to Dr. King, "Tell him about the dream, Martin." Because the speech was never about "I have a dream." The speech was another speech he had written for that moment. And at that 5-minute mark or so, he launches into the I have a dream.
Yeah. How have I never heard this story before?
It gets better, Ross. So then he goes into the I have a dream speech.
Yeah.
And then he walks off stage. And the great George Raveling, who I love like a father, goes up to Dr. King and says, "Dr. King, can I have a copy of that speech?" And Dr. King folds it in half and hands it to him. And he has owned that speech his entire life until he gave it to Villanova 2 years ago, and never promotes that he owned it. You can actually, CBS News has a clip of Dr. King handing him the speech. They did a feature on it years ago.
How old was George?
George had to be 22, 23.
Wow.
And so, you know, I've been blessed to know Coach for pretty much... I got to know him when I first started. My first time in television was at CBS, and I got to know him there. And there was a production assistant there named John Colmansberger. It truly was Rain Man. I mean, this is a guy that could correct newspapers on things that were wrong. That's how he was. And JK would ride his bike down to the Strand bookstore and buy all the out-of-town newspapers, because this is no internet now. And then he would cut up the clips and send them to Rav. And he's like, "You should meet Rav. Rav's one of the greatest readers of all time," and he is. And so then when I was living in Los Angeles, my wife and I were living in L.A., Rav and I really got to know each other, and we started to have lunch or dinner once a month, once every 2 weeks. And we were both reading The Trillion Dollar Coach by the people that started Google, and all the influences of Bill Campbell, who was a former, you probably played against him. He was the head coach of Columbia.
Yes. He was before me, but Ivy League football guy, very well known. The Campbell Trophy.
Right. But he only won 9 games at Columbia.
Yeah, I bet.
He only won 9 games at Columbia, right? But he thought so highly of his leadership skills, he moved out to Palo Alto and set up a consulting business. And the Trillion Dollar Coach book is about him advising $1 trillion worth of people in the Silicon Valley. And so Rav and I are reading this book. We're both reading it, and we say, "Look, you know, everybody needs a coach. Everybody needs somebody to help them every day, you know?" And so that's how we started the Daily Coach.
That is absolutely awesome. You know, Mike, I was thinking this offseason with Tom Telesco, the new Raiders GM, getting a second bite at the apple, there aren't many people that have ever done that. Do you feel like, it's funny because off the top of my head, at one point you were the head of personnel for the Raiders. I think when I was a player.
Right.
But I don't know. You'd have to tell me the dynamic between you and Al Davis in terms of like final decision making.
Oh, well, there's no debate here now. You know, and going back, and Ron Wolf will tell you the same thing. Ron Wolf and I, Ken Herrock, we all had Steve Wortmeyer, the late Steve Wortmeyer, we all held that job. We were advisors. We were not decision makers. You know, you would say to him, "Hey, I think."
What was were you called the general manager?
Oh, no, you were a senior assistant. He would never give out titles. God forbid, no.
Okay.
No, you never had titles. I never had in my career, even when I was in Cleveland the year I was a general manager, that was the only time I had that title. I never had the authority that to just say, "This is who we're picking, and I don't care what anybody else says."
When you went to Cleveland, you still didn't have that?
No, Banner had all the authority. He was the one running the draft. He ran everything.
And Banner,
but that was fine.
Banner's the one that brought you in.
But Banner brought me in. I'm not complaining about that. The only draft that I really kind of that had all the not all the authority, but I had pretty much Jeff Lurie gave me the authority, And Banner did in the 97 draft when we traded for Hugh Douglas. We drafted Trey Thomas. We drafted Jeremiah Trotter, Alan Rossum, Brandon Whiting. I reached that draft. And then I got fired.
You know, so, Mike, I don't think I knew you were in Philly.
Yeah, I was there for that 1 year, and I ran
that
draft.
When I was still in high school.
I ran that draft. I traded a second-round pick to Parcells. I can still remember him telling me, you know, he was getting pissed off.
What was your title?
I was pro personnel director, but there was no GM. Dick Daniels had just gotten fired, so I was kind of running it. Banner was kind of running it, but I was really the point man. And I remember going into Banner's office, and I'm saying, look, Joe, either we do this or the big fella who's having dinner right now with Mike Francesca is going to bail on it, right? So that's when we traded for you, Douglas. We gave up a 2 and a 5.
That was a good trade.
Yeah, it was a really good trade.
Hugh was a heck of a player. Parcells just didn't think he was big enough or didn't like him in a 3-4. Didn't think he was a good fit.
It wasn't a fit for him. He wanted to play a 34, and he's not really – he's not a Sam backer.
He's not.
You know, so
– He's a thick, powerful dude.
Yeah, he could play – you know, he would play OEN today. He would play open side end today if that – you know, crash end, whatever you want to call him. Yeah, he would do that. But – so that draft, that was really the only draft that I kind of had – and I didn't have complete authority in that draft, but that's kind of the one. But that's okay.
How many years were you in Philly?
I was just there for that two drafts. And I got fired after that when they brought Modrak in after that. Because Jeffrey was obsessed with the Pittsburgh way there. You know, I think a lot of these owners, it's really an interesting case study. If you look at some of these, the good owners now, like Jeffrey, right?
Yeah.
Jeffrey became a good owner. He initially wasn't one.
Oh, okay.
He learned how to become a good owner. What Jeffrey was really good at doing early in his career was saying, look, I value offensive and defensive linemen, and I want this organization to be built around that. I want to that's what we're going to spend our money on.
Yeah.
Draft capital, free agency. That's what an owner needs to do. But the other stuff, he was a little bit always, should I go with the Patriot way? Do I like Dick Daniel? Do I like the Bobby Bethard way? What about Ron Wolf now? You know, they were always intrigued by other things. And finally, he just got comfortable in his own skin. And I think what Kraft said at Belichick's press conference, he said something really important. He said, you know, I was really, I didn't know what, I wasn't very good early in my ownership career because I listened to too many people. And I think that's where David Tepper is. I think that's where Josh Harris is going to be. I think all of them, when they start out, they listen to too many people.
You know, it's funny, as you're talking, Mike, does the NFL, like the NFL, maybe they can't do it for competitive reasons, but it sounds to me like these owners, because I've heard so many, and you know more than me, but I've heard a lot of owner stories over the years, like about them being more involved than people realize.
Oh, yeah,
and decisions. And a lot of them really don't know what they're doing. I almost feel like there should be a business, like you should start a business, or you and somebody where you're consultants for owners.
Well, you know, I wrote Gridiron Genius, which is a book that if an owner read that book, it would make him a better owner. And so I thought that when I wrote that book, I would get a lot of people would call me. I've sent that book to some owners, but I don't think they read it. I've gotten a lot of basketball people have read that book and listen to the podcast and do that, that call me and help and want me to consult and do that. The football world thinks they do all that. The basketball world, the baseball world, you know, I probably have more consulting gigs in baseball and basketball than in football. I have a couple in football, mostly college, but I think they kind of think they know it, or whoever's advising them or telling them, don't read that. That's
right,
garbage.
Right.
You know, that guy doesn't know what he's talking about.
Right.
You know? So, you know, which.
And that's really the deal, right, Mike? Like every owner has somebody that they trust or close to them or whatever that basically is in their ear. And that person's very, very important.
Well, yeah, let me just read you something here. So in 1975, Bill Walsh was interviewed with Paul Zimmerman. They had an interview, and they were discussing the world of what was happening in the NFL. And Walsh was talking about, you know, all the things that go on in the NFL. And this is the beginning chapter that Zimmerman's book, which you should read. It's hard to get. It's called The Thinking Man's Guide to Football. It was written in the 70s. And this is Walsh's quote. At the top of the club, you've got the owner. He doesn't know have the knowledge he should have. He's knowledgeable of business. He's made money. He's made it quickly. He wants to do things quickly without quite knowing how. In the middle somewhere is the general manager. Nobody knows what he's got in the position. He's firmly with the owner, his comfort zone, and he demands quite a salary for doing very little. Then there's the personnel guy, a frustrated coach. He justifies his position by sending scouts out to look for talent. That's when it's the coach who's there working 12 hours a day watching tape. And the three of them sit with the owner, the president and the general manager sit with the owner and tell the owner what's going wrong, and it's always the coach's fault.
Right.
That's 75.
Because it's almost 50 years ago now.
And it's true today.
Yeah.
This is what happened in Atlanta.
Yeah.
This is why Belichick's not a coach in Atlanta. Terry Fontenot and Rich McKay convinced Arthur Blank that, you know, this is what we should do.
Do you think – so is it fair to say Belichick overplayed his hand?
No, I don't think he overplayed his hand. He was honest. He just went in and said – see, I think what happened in that situation is very simply, Arthur flew him down. He was got on Arthur's yacht. They start talking about who is Bill? See, there's this narrative that Bill's this – you know, dictator from some country that wants to come in and just take over the world, you know? And so there's certain things that a coach wants and has to have, right? Like, for example, Atlanta has no workout bonuses in their contracts in terms of for off-season program.
Right.
Well, that's really important to a coach. He wants the players there to work out. He wants incentives to build the team. It helps your culture. It also helps the drive. It unifies the team. You're getting guys to work out. It helps player development, too.
Yeah.
Right? Well, if you don't have that in your contracts, guys don't have to show up.
Right.
There's no incentive for them to come in there. They say, okay, I'm not getting paid to do this. Why? You know, so, you know, is that being power hungry?
No.
Okay, so, but that's something he would
I've
want.
Heard you say that this offseason, that they weren't, that guys like Belichick and Vrabel aren't power hungry, they're culture hungry.
They want to build their program, right? They want things done in a certain way that's in the best interest of building a team.
But don't you understand, Mike, like if I'm Fontenot or Rich McKay, this is actually where I think the biggest problem is with the NFL. Everybody is just out for themselves and trying to survive. And so if you're Fontenot, Belichick coming in there is not good for you. But he's probably going to get rid of you.
But he was
McKay.
He was told. Well, first of all, the whole conversation began under the understanding that McKay was not going to be involved. Because if Arthur would have said to Bill, McKay is going to still be the president and he's still going to be involved with the football, there would have been no interview taking place. That's one. Two, Belichick was told from the initial get-go that Fontenot was going to be part of the GM, that they weren't going to let him go. That's two. So he
went, and he was okay with that?
Because, I mean...
But did he think he would have final say?
Well, I think he thought he would have final say over building of the team.
Right.
I mean, he wasn't, you know, and then he would want Fontenot to go pick players for the systems and the beliefs of what he thinks.
Right.
So football and baseball, we're different sports, right? You can play third base for the Mets, and play third base for the Yankees in the same day.
Yeah.
Okay? You know, as being a player, you can't play for Kyle Shanahan's zone outside run scheme and then go play for a power run scheme. They're just two different style of players. Yeah. So the job of Brett Veach and the job of John Lynch, who neither have control of the draft, who neither have the authority to do anything without the head coach saying to it, their job is to understand what the coach wants offensively, defensively, in the kicking game. This is the type of player we have to have. This is the style of player we need. This is the character of the player I want. And then they teach their scouts that. This is called scouting inside out, not outside in. And so when you do that, when the programs run through the coach's belief systems, then when you lose a coach, you don't have any problem. You replace him with another coach, but you don't replace a whole philosophy. You follow me?
Yeah.
So when you lose a coach, the next coach comes in, he's not saying, well, I don't want to really run outside zone. I want to run power. No. The program's built on this. This is how
the next coach has to run the same stuff?
The next coach teaches what's been going on. Like he's not an independent if you were in business and IBM hired a middle manager, would the middle manager change IBM's culture and structure? Of course they wouldn't. It would be ridiculous. Why would it be in the NFL? So if I hired a running back coach, he's going to tell me now what runs we're going to run? There's a running – that's where Pittsburgh's so good. Pittsburgh has a philosophy, right? They have a philosophy on what they want to do, how they want to pick, where they're going. You could say, you know, they've been worked out. But when Mike walked in there, that philosophy, he helped build more to it. And then you scout inside out. Then you start looking for players. The FBI never looks goes to the phone book to look for a serial killer. They have a profile. Well, good teams that run good that have good teams, they have profiles for every position. And that profile is not predicted by the running back coach or the receiver coach. That's predicted by the general manager and the head coach working together on a philosophy. That's how you win in the NFL. You can't do it the other way, because what happens is you lose a coach, he goes somewhere else. It's like in recruiting. If you let the coach who's recruiting Orange County and he leaves and he picks all the players, then the next guy comes in, he's 10, you know, he can't get ahead of the game, because now you got to replace that guy. So it starts at the top. That's why you win. That's who wins, teams that have that. That's not power hungry. That's called player development. This game, the Super Bowl that was played, was a testimonial to Walsh's idea of organizational culture. The way they both organizations are set up were completely from the dynamic of Walsh. Scout inside out. The head coach control the philosophy. People work. The information goes through a pyramid. It goes upward. It isn't collaborative. It's information being shared through the line.
Were you really surprised that Vrabel didn't get a job?
Sure. I was surprised Vrabel lost his job. Like, if you were sitting in a room and you said to me, how am I going to get a better coach than Mike Vrabel?
Unbelievable.
Well, but
And based on what do they think Brian Callahan's better? Based on what?
Well, Rand Carthon's running the team. Brian Callahan's in a really tough spot. He's got to run the team. He's got to coach the team. Brian Callahan's job is to make Will Levis a better player. Period. End of story. That's
right.
It. That's his job. He's a head coach in name, and, you know, and he's going to coach the team. And I've seen him since he was a little kid. You know, and I hope he does great. I really do. And getting his father in there was tremendous for him.
I thought that the Browns should have tried to get a draft pick for him.
They should have.
Position coaches are way more important than people realize.
Well, there are certain position coaches are.
Good ones.
Well, good ones are always hard to find. But look, if you're again, let's go back to organizational philosophy. You pay offensive line coaches. You pay defensive line coaches. You pay offensive coordinators. There's really about five positions that matter on the coaching staff. Five. The two line coaches, the secondary coach, the quarterback coach, coordinator, and the coordinator, and then the special teams coach.
I would argue, Mike, in my experience, I think running back coach matters more than you think. I can remember 1 year the running backs were not good in pass pro. Not good. We got a new running back coach. It was the same running backs. The next year, they were on it. I mean, it was a noticeable difference.
That's the coordinator's job. That's the coordinator's job.
To make sure that
that's right.
They know who their blitz pickup is.
Because that new running back coach probably didn't – he was taught how to teach running back. I went to the airport to pick up Sherman Lewis. I was working at the 49ers, 19-something. And Sherman Lewis was the defensive coordinator of Michigan State. And Bill Walsh tells me, go to the airport, pick up this guy, Sherman Lewis. So I go down to the media guide so I could see his picture, because, you know, this is this is 83 or something, and you know, you don't know the internet, right? So I don't know who Sherman Lewis is.
No cell phones, nothing,
right? So I see a picture of Sherman, I see he's the defensive coordinator. Pick him up in my car, drive him back to 7-Eleven Nevada Street, put him upstairs with coach, and we hire him as the running back coach. And I'm like, I have no idea why. We just hired a defense, you know, kind of confusing. So about six months later, I'm in a car asking Coach Walsh. I'm driving him around. The coach's like, why did we hire a defense coordinator to be the running back coach? He said, because I would rather train people to do it my way than have to retrain people.
Wow.
And it was a powerful statement for me, because he taught Sherman what he wanted him to teach, which then kept the chemistry and the culture and the philosophy tied together. So one guy's not teaching something different than another guy. Everybody's, again, this is a big thing in the NFL. Everybody says we're on the same page. But nobody really talks about alignment. That story I just told you with Sherman is alignment. Right? Everybody's aligned to the philosophy. When you're on the same page, once you lose, then, that wasn't me, man. I didn't do that. You know, that page gets turned quickly.
Check him out on social media at @MLombardiNFL. You can see why the GM Shuffle podcast is so popular. Obviously, the Lombardi line, and highly recommend you guys sign up for the Daily Coach newsletter. It is fantastic. Mike, thank you so much for coming on the show. Really
Thanks,
appreciate
buddy.
It.
I appreciate you, Ross.
Man, Lombardi is a fountain of information. Big fan anytime we get Mike on the show. Big fan of DiGiorno. Listen, anytime you're hosting game day, movie night, whatever, I had a daddy daddy-daughter date the other night, you need the perfect setting, the perfect squad, the perfect eats. Luckily, you're a game-time mastermind. You know, grabbing DiGiorno Classic Crust Pizza can bring home a dub. It's packed with half a pound of cheese, sauce, other toppings. Comes at a ridiculous price. Make the game-winning call and grab a DiGiorno Classic Crust Pizza from the grocery store today. It's not delivery. It's DiGiorno. Wash it down with some of my faves. Those Labatt Blue Lights, had several of those over the weekend. It just feels so good when it touches your lips. Always enjoy them responsibly like I do. Beer, Labatt USA, Buffalo, New York.
Tuck's Takes.
All right, Ross, we've got more and more guys that are either getting released or expected to be released before the start of the new league year, including Saints safety Marcus May, Vikings running back Alexander Mattison.
Right, and there will be more where those came from, Jack, and even with the salary cap going up, they really just don't care, right? Like, they just don't think that those guys are worth that money. I'll say this, too, in terms of the combine. I don't get too into the combine. I will say, like, in terms of, like, the physical testing, the short shuttle and the 10-yard dash. That 10-yard split, that's football. That burst, that matters. I do think it's interesting. Maybe I'll say some more about it later in the week. I think it's interesting, Caleb Williams, the first prospect to decline to submit to the medical exams at the combine. I guess he feels like he has that leverage, but that also plays into some of the negative stuff that's out there about Caleb and his team or whatever as well. So interesting decision from Caleb. Other than that, I think we're done here.
Thanks for tuning in to the Ross Tucker Football Podcast. Make sure to also check out Even Money, Fantasy Feast, and College Draft, all on the DraftKings Network on Samsung TV Plus, YouTube, or subscribe to the podcast on your favorite platform.
Shout out MyFrontPageStory.com. The offer still stands. I don't care if you get it for somebody's birthday, anniversary, anybody. If you get a story at MyFrontPageStory.com, and you forward me the email after you sign up for it or pay for it or whatever, I guarantee I'll send you a signed press pass or a football card or picture. You're guaranteed to get my autograph. That it's that easy. I love backofficescheduler.com, steakhousesports.com, humanheadnyc.com, sporticulture, Pizza Boy Brewing.